We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 36 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson, and we're elated to have you join us in our podcast environment. You know, Keisha, as expected, we have another fierce female, a legend among legends with us today. So let's learn a little bit more about Betsy Corcoran, famous Betsy Corcoran. Currently, she leads a new collective. We're going to be learning a lot more about that, where they advise organizations seeking to make a difference in how we learn. She and her partners consult with C-level leaders on how to foster vibrant teams that stress authenticity, transparency, and humanity. I'm liking the sound of that, Keisha. You know, this draws on decades of experience in leading teams and analyzing the industry's top leader. In 2011, Betsy co-founded and served as CEO of EdSurge, an organization we have all become so familiar with. And it became the leading information hub for teachers, entrepreneurs, and school leaders with a commitment to EdTech. She was named a rock star of education because of these efforts. You know, EdSurge created a vibrant community for all of these leaders and received multiple awards for its journalism, as well for its impact in the education from groups including the New Schools Ventures Fund and the ASU GSV Summit. In 2019, she negotiated its successful acquisition by ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education. She has served as the Silicon Valley Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine, and she has received national recognition for her work as a journalist at organizations that include the Washington Post and Scientific American magazine. Whew, definitely a legend and a rock star. You know, she is best known for being a speaker, a fierce questioner, and conference moderator, and LinkedIn influencer. She's appeared on just a couple of things like CNBC, NBC's Press Here, and Class Action, as well as other programs. She's an advisor to the Remote Conferences on Learning and has served as the keynote speaker and moderator and presenter at conferences throughout the U.S. and internationally. She writes regularly on the future of learning for sites including EdSurge, and she serves on the board of the New Harmony Line and advises the Unboxing School Movement and the Remote Summit. Where does she find the time? I can't wait to hear about her self-care habits. She's a fellow with the PAHARA Aspen Education Fellows Program and has been a fellow in the Knight Science Journalism Program at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And in 2019, she received the ISTE Impact Award, recognizing outstanding work in improving learning and leading in the field of education. This is all founded on some great work that she's done at Georgetown University, earning her BA in economics and math. I'm excited to learn more.
Betsy is another outstanding shero in education that you, if you have not heard of Betsy, you've heard of many of the projects that she has led and influenced, including the incredible EdSurge, which had a great article, by the way, about teachers, retention and how to recruit teachers. So little plug for teacher retention and how we're going to make sure we can build our teacher workforce. So each week we explore models of leadership together, and we are looking at what our guests see in the mirror, like the reflections of their self, mentors who have impacted them. And then we want to know kind of what movements and mavericks that you're watching that inspire you and influence our world. So what we like to do is call that our honor roll pattern of M. We don't like acronyms, Betsy, so we just picked one letter.
I think that's great.
Oh, Keisha, don't forget, we also want to catch any edgy babble we use to make sure our listening community connects with what's being said. And while I know you mentioned EdSurge, I know Betsy has really been up to a lot of new, exciting projects. And part of that is really around the ideation around fierce questioning. Betsy, welcome to the Honor Roll. Tell us, what's this fierce questioning that you engage in?
Thank you. Well, Frances and Keisha, first off, thank you so much for having me here. It's fantastic to be with you because you guys inspire us. You inspire everyone. Fierce questioning. You know, my background, as you've said, is as a journalist. And asking questions is pretty fundamental to, you know, the way I approach the world. And I think the way that democracy, you know, is set up. And when I talk about asking fierce questions or fearless questions, it's about not asking in a way that denigrates or criticizes the person or even the ideas, but really tries to explore, what are you trying to say? Where are you trying to go with this? We too often shy away from asking hard questions. We shy away because we think, oh, that person's not going to ever talk to me again. Or just because we're afraid. Sometimes we're afraid of the answers. And so fierce questioning means that you have to ask the questions and be ready to receive the wisdom, receive the thoughtfulness, and do something with it.
Well, my friend, having been interviewed by you before, I can tell you that the other thing that your process for questioning does is it provokes deeper thought and reflection than what I consider typical from a journalist. So you really make me, when you've asked me questions before, you make me think about the question, you know, the way that I'm going to answer the question and the impact that the way I answer it is going to have on, like, the greater good, so to speak. So,
you know, I appreciate you saying that, Keisha, because I think that particularly for folks who are in the world of ideas, who talk a lot, who are sharing, who are teaching, and who are learning, sometimes we can get into patterns, right? Remember the old joke about, you know, press button 13. Here's answer number 6, you know. We all forget to ask ourselves the hard questions too. Why am I doing this? What am I really trying to accomplish here? Did my original goals get lost somewhere between where I am now and where I started from? And I think it's helpful to use questions to really push yourself and push other people to have some real integrity around what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And is this really, you know, hoping to achieve the goal that I'm trying to get to?
Yeah, absolutely. I just appreciate your work so much and your influence on the field. And speaking of questions, we now have questions for you. And they are all, as we've mentioned, related to M models. So let's start with my favorite question. Who are your role models and why?
This is a great question. And, you know, you cheated by asking me this ahead of time. So I spent some time thinking about it. And at first, of course, when we think about role models, the first people we think of are, you know, the people who are wildly successful, you know, people who have big names and have done great things. And there are lots of people like that. I think I've said to you, Karen Cater has been both a good friend, a great leader, hugely successful, both the work she did in the Obama administration in the Department of Education, and then the work that she did to build up Digital Promise. Amazing. Stacey Childress, an amazing leader who also, you know, went from being a professor to being at the Gates Foundation to leading New School Venture Fund and the work that she's doing now around research and learning. Phenomenal. But I paused a little bit and thought harder about, you know, leaders are also people who are channeling the communities that they are representing. And that's huge. And when I think about that, two other people come to mind whose work I've admired tremendously. One is a gal named Ame Eubanks Davis, who runs an organization called Braven. And what Ame had discovered, she worked for Teach for America for a long time. And at some point she realized, well, you know, where are students of color who are going to be in a place to lead TFA in the future? And then she started to kind of walk that back and say, you know, what happens sometimes is we take students of color and we put them in great environments, but we forget to give them the support networks, the gentle coaching that we need to figure out how to survive in the world, to figure out how we move forward, to make them feel that they're not alone. And so she created Braven to do exactly that, to use students themselves to coach each other and to kind of mentor them going forward, and really took all of her experience, again, channeling her community and saying, here's what we need. Another person who's done that phenomenally is Alexandra Bernadotte, who runs Beyond 12. Once again, you know, we had this huge push to say, we got to get kids into college. And then sometimes we forgot about them. It's not just about getting into college. It's about how do you thrive in college? How do you get something out of it? And so what Alex did is ask those same questions. How do we use technology to support coaching? How do we use people to support coaching? How do we make sure that the kids that we're getting into college are really going to thrive there, come out of college, and be ready to help the next generation? So I really admire what Alex and what Ame have been doing. And against many obstacles, against many odds, they've been doing it for a number of years. And there's a lot to that, too. You can't just start it. You got to keep running it.
Such an incredible list of sheroes. And these are sheroes that have really helped you think beyond the idea of just surviving and thriving, but really about flourishing, right? And I love that all of these folks impact you in many different ways, from your own internal thoughts to your thoughts in community and your thoughts in the larger, greater world. You know, as you think about these sheroes, I think, Keisha, we now have our next season guest list already lined up, because now I want to talk to every single one of these amazing folks.
Thank you, Betsy.
I think they're phenomenal people, and I will be listening with great interest to hear what they have to say and hear about what's inspiring them and what keeps them going. Because, you know, we all have those days where you just think, oh my God, the odds are too big, right? I just do not want to get out of bed this morning. The question of what helps these folks replenish themselves, what gives them the courage to say, I'm going to go at this again. I'm going to try a little harder. Ask them those questions. I'm really looking forward to hearing their answers.
And I'm sure they are looking forward to yours too. It's so, so generative, this space that we've created on the honor roll. You know, you talked a little bit about your role models, and the next M question is really around our mentors, or those life coaches, as some of us refer to them. And they come in so many different forms. So I'm curious, who might have been a mentor to you that's helped shape your thinking and guide you?
So, you know, I'm going to push back a little on the mentor thing. Okay. It's one of the things that honestly sometimes is a little bit of a catch-all term. When I was, 100 years ago, when I was very young, I thought, oh, I need a mentor. And somehow a mentor was supposed to be like this Dumbledore figure, right? This figure of wisdom that you could always go to, and they'd tell you the right thing, and you'd move on, and, you know, the sun would shine and the birds would sing and all that jazz. I don't believe in mentors. I just don't. I think what we look for is we look for inspiration. We look for coaching. Sometimes we look for people to open doors. When I was starting EdSurge, a very, very, very smart man said to me, well, Betsy, I'll tell you, you'll learn something in this process. You will be surprised both by the people who help you and by the people who don't. So true. That was also the last conversation I ever had with him. So he clearly put himself in that bucket. I think that the concept that I like better than mentors is a personal board of directors. And to me, the difference is this, that with a board of directors, you don't expect that they have an answer. You don't expect that they're going to wave their magic wand. You think of them as a place to go to try ideas out. You think of them as people who will ask you hard questions and challenge you and sometimes confront you and push back at you. I think we all need that community. The other thing that's really, I think, compelling about a board of directors is you need different people in your life at different times, both because you've changed and because what you're doing has changed and because the world has changed. And so what I find really powerful is who are the board of directors that you have? Who are the people around you who are pushing you? One person outside of the education space who's been a great mentor to me has been a woman named Judy Estrin, who is an early pioneer in networking. And she's been terrific. And half the time she tells me I'm wrong. A person in the education space whose words I have cherished, but who has also told me I'm wrong and has sometimes disagreed, has been Bobby Krishan, Barbara Krishan, who has, led so much work in education and has been a remarkable leader herself. I think of them as incredible advisors, people who really push me, have made me better, have opened doors. But again, mentors, I don't know. I just think we put a little too much into that idea. And I don't think I necessarily believe in that concept anymore.
I think that is super cool way to think about having all of these, I hate the term influencers now. Thank you, millennials. But to have all these people around you that you can go to for different aspects of your life too. It's like, a concierge group of people that you are just your kind of go-to people. So I love that. And I bet if a lot of us reflected, we probably have that too. We just don't look at it that the way that you've just described it. So you've coined a new movement, my friend, yet again. All right. How about this one? When you look in the mirror, when did you see a leader looking back at you?
Wow. What a question. I guess I'm still looking.
Are you changing mirrors?
Yeah. I don't know, really. I think that we all have opportunities in our life. We all have moments where we need to step up and where we need to, shoulder the burden and kind of march forward and channel our community and be at the front of the pack. I think we also sometimes have moments where we're not there. And so I don't know. I don't think it's quite that crystal clear for me. Maybe you've got a better mirror than I do, Keish. I think that there have been moments where I have been grateful to lead a group. And there have been moments that I have been grateful to be part of a group and to learn from people, independent of what my job title has been. Some of the really profound moments that I had when I was chief executive of EdSurge came from learning from people who were, quote, working for me. They changed my ideas. They made me smarter. Sometimes I disagreed with them profoundly. There was one moment where we had couple of members of staff who had been deep friends and for whatever reason got off track and were going at each other. And boy, oh boy, I was doing my best to mediate between the two of them and so forth. And one of my colleagues said, you know, I think we need to try a restorative justice circle. And I thought, I don't know about this thing. Yeah, whatever. Maybe. I was so wrong. That was such a profound moment for the community, for the group. I learned so much by going through a restorative justice circle. I've become a huge fan of that as a process and a protocol for helping groups and people who are having a hard time communicating with each other take a moment, listen, share, you know, start to find the humanity on the other side. So, you know, we tend to venerate leaders. And again, I've been thinking a lot about leadership, both because of this and, you know, because of some of the tragic things that are going on in the world today. We can say that the president of the Ukraine is an astounding leader. And he's channeling his people. He's channeling the people of Ukraine. I think great leaders are channels for their communities. And so, again, there have been times that I've been grateful and humbled to be that channel. But it's not every day of the week. And there are a lot of times that I just need to learn.
Well, a learning leader you are, and there has been no doubt that you've also been an incredible champion for other female leaders. Hence, part of the reason we wanted to talk to you even more and about is some of the new adventures that you're engaged in. And I know Keisha and I are huge fans of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she always says that women should be in all the spaces that decisions are being made. And I know you have really elevated the voice of so many fierce women. And we're just curious to get inside your head a little bit. How do you see women changing the world, yourself included in that?
So to the extent that we assign certain characteristics to women and certain characteristics to men, if we want to think of it that way, you know, we have historically said women are more community-based. They tend to embrace. They tend to want to listen. These things, these characterizations are tricky. You know, not all women are that way. Not all men are not that way, that sort of thing. So I guess maybe what I'd like to say is I think that characteristics that are needed so deeply in the world, which many women bring, are ones of listening, of ones of embracing, of ones of being flexible. Akeisha, you'll probably have a good appreciation for this, but you know, we often found at EdSurge that some of the folks who were most adaptable and flexible were the women. And I think that someone looked at me at one point and go, you know, when you've had a baby on your back and they've just spit up on you for the third time and you've changed your shirt for the third time and then you're going to do that meeting. Yeah, of course you got to be flexible, right? When you've been down on your knees and you've been scrubbing the floor or the bathroom or something, and then you have to get up and give a lecture. Yeah, you got to be flexible. Women's roles embrace a lot. We do a lot. And I think that's a huge virtue. One of the things that we've all learned through the pandemic is our lives are not just work. Our lives include the children and the family and the dogs and the parents and the, you know, the house falling down and all of those things. And women are incredibly adaptable to all of those things. So how are women changing the world? Well, I hope that we're making the world a little more flexible. I hope that we can make the world into a better set of listeners. I hope that we can lead with our hearts, lead with the things that we really care about. one of the really interesting questions, which I'd written about as a journalist and have thought a lot about, is, you know, the question of why many women will get up to the C level in a company, but maybe not become the CEO. And there are historic reasons for that. There are discrimination reasons and glass ceilings. Sometimes, though, women are smarter, because sometimes you can be have a strategic role in a company, but you don't have to do every ribbon cutting that the company asks for. I'm not saying that you shouldn't want to be a CEO, but I think sometimes women are thoughtful about how do I have impact and yet have a little bit more time and space in my life for other things that matter deeply to me. And how do I, again, going back to kind of fiercely questioning yourself too, how am I honest with myself about what really matters to me? My kids matter. My family matters. My friends matter. Maybe the ribbon cutting doesn't matter so much. So, long way of saying, I hope, to the extent that this is a women's characteristic, I hope that we bring listening ear, a questioning, sort of a sense of really taking our pulse and asking what matters, a caring, an embrace. And hopefully maybe sometimes humor.
A lot of times humor. Yeah, that reminds me, I was in a conversation with a female colleague, much younger in her life and in her career, and she was kind of struggling with the question of taking on more projects, but she's got three kids. And I was saying, you know, at this, what you have to decide is, is it okay for me to say no? Because the best answer is I've got to be with my family and kids, and being okay with that. Because I think sometimes as women, we can be shamed for that answer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And she's like, oh my gosh, nobody's ever stated it like that. I'm like, yeah, you are the only one in control of your destiny, realistically, through the decisions that you make. And do you want to make a decision to take on X client or whatever and be away from your kids for a period of time, that, you know, and miss so much stuff, you know? And she thought about our conversation. She's like, I'm going to do things completely, you know, I'm going to do things differently. I'm not going to say yes just for the cash. I'm going to say da, da, da. I think that's another struggle we have as women, is just that, that tug of, you know, I've got to be relevant. I've got to move ahead. I've got to, you know, I've got to be positioned. You know, and there's women that have done it, but I always like to wonder, like Kamala, a lot of our guests always put Kamala up as, our next question is around a maverick. And a lot of our guests always put her up. And I'm thinking every time they say, I'm like, I wonder what she had to give up. Like, I wonder what, if we had her on our show, I wonder what she would say. I had to give all this up to get this. Like, I'm glad I've got it, but I wonder what people women who have really disturbed the system have had to sacrifice to make that disturbance.
Probably a lot.
Probably a lot.
Two thoughts on that. Number one is, one of the core values at EdSurge was, you know, I said to people, and this was pre-pandemic, I don't care where you work. I don't care what times you work. You want to work on Saturday morning at 3 a.m, God bless you. As long as you get the job done, I don't really care when and where you're working. And what's more is, I do care that when you need to go and do something else for that other, the rest of your life, which really matters, you just go do it. And so I never want you to either pretend that you have a meeting when you're going to a school meeting. Just say you're going to a school meeting. Go. That's great. And, you know, the funny thing is that not a single person over the course of almost 10 years ever abused that. There was no one who ever abused that. What it did is it freed up everyone in the company to talk about the things that mattered in their lives And then we knew what was going on with people. So when they're having a bad day, we knew why they were having a bad day or a good day or whatever. So again, that transparency of saying, yeah, let's acknowledge that we have a life and that life is really important. Mm-hmm. And let's integrate those things together. So a huge fan of just trusting people. And, you know, at least in my experience, they live up to your trust.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thinking about the kind of the M, who can you think of, and it could be more than one, that are those female mavericks out there that are kind of not necessarily setting the standard, but setting the stage for the younger women who are kind of coming up?
Yeah. You know, Keisha, I'd like to ask you a question on this too, okay? Yeah. I want to understand this concept of maverick.
You talked to Frances, didn't you?
I want to understand this concept of maverick. What do we mean by maverick? What do you mean by maverick?
Well, I'm going to defer to my friend Frances because, no, I never get to put her on the spot. And this actually was a question that she came up with. So,
Frances,
I'm gonna let
what do you mean by maverick?
It.
I knew this day would come.
I'm so happy, Betsy, that you set me up for this. I can't even tell you how happy I am.
I tell you. She's been waiting for a long time to get me on this one. You know, it's so interesting as you ask this question. Again, thinking about the pattern of M's, we were, you know, brainstorming, all ideas are hot. But one of the things that everybody says is like, disturb the system, be bold. And one of the things that I've always, that polarity management, the both and thinking, right? That tension that one of our guests, Carolyn McCanders, talked about is, I think a lot of times it's like that, that idea that you hear about putting the pebble on the pond and letting it ripple through, right? To me, those are the mavericks who know how to like pick up the right pebble and do it in a way that's incredibly thoughtful in many of the ways that you talked about, Betsy, right? With trust and honesty and dignity and flexibility, like that ripples through a system and changes the culture and the context and the community. An example of just even a strategy that does that instead of an individual might be just even paraphrasing. When you said listening, it spoke to my heart because listening means I'm hearing your content and your emotion and the opportunity to say, I gotcha. But more importantly, did I understand you? And did it give you an opportunity to understand yourself more deeply? So when I think about the mavericks, to me, it's the person who puts the pebble on the pond. And then the contrast to that, you know, having spent 25 years in a large urban school district, I was like, be bold. And I said, yeah, there's a lot of people throwing boulders on ponds, right? To kind of play out that idea of bold. But the problem is everybody's saying, why is there a boulder in the middle of the pond? Why do we make such a mess? Why are we going around this boulder? So to me, the maverick is really, my personal story is it's the person who knows how to put the pebble on the pond with all of those core values rippling through. So maybe that creates another sense of awareness of how we're thinking about mavericks and folks that might be those pebbles on the pond for us.
Good. I like the image of a pebble on the pond, and that helps me tremendously because now I can give you two examples of people I think have done a great job of putting pebbles in the pond. And you probably know both of them. One is Kim Smith. Kim Smith has been involved in education in the, and she doesn't take like the front row seat, but in terms of standing back and throwing a pebble in a pond, she created New School Venture Fund. She created Bellwether Consulting in Education, and she created something called PARA. And in each case, she radically changed the direction of the education community. With New School Venture Fund, there had never been anybody funding venture organizations in education. She was way ahead of ed tech. She was ed tech before ed tech was cool. And just to jump to PAHARA, PAHARA is a leadership program that's brought together people from all types and corners of education with a very strong emphasis on equity issues. And again, she was way ahead of that curve. And so I really got to point to Kim Smith as someone who has been a profound influence and yet probably not always top of mind, even though she is the one who's standing out there throwing the pebbles in the pond. A second person who I'd put in that category as well is Isabel Howe. She had been at Omidyar Ventures, but what I think Isabel has done really profoundly, the pebble that she's thrown in the pond, is really putting attention on the very youngest learners, pre-K, what happens in the home when children are born. And she has been an absolutely tireless and fierce advocate of, you know, our youngest, our littlest learners. Way before we really acknowledged that as something different and something that need to be thought of differently than other parts of the education world. And so I love the work that both of them, you know, both have done and continued to do. I guess a third person too, and again, pebble in the pond. I have to give a shout out to Jen Carolyn, who founded Reach Ventures, which has been a starting point for now dozens and dozens of important education technology companies. But the thing that Reach is really notable for, the list that they top, has been a venture firm that is truly diverse. They are literally ranked recently number one for diversity among partners. And the thing that I love about Jennifer is, if you ask her, she's like, I just brought together the best people I could find. And yep, they happen to be pretty darn diverse. But it started by saying, who are the best people I can find? And so again, another person way, way ahead of the trend, really helping start a trend and throwing pebbles in the pond and doing it every single day.
That's so beautiful. I have this image now of all these little pebbles stacking together. Like you see it, a labyrinth that just brings you so much calm and peace and new heightened awareness. And of course, that takes me to the self-care space, right? And so as you take care of so many others and you take care of yourself, you said earlier that it's really important that we ask ourselves the hard question. And what we have found with all of our guests is that this is probably the hardest question to answer. And that is, how do you take care of yourself? What might we learn from the book of Betsy about self-care?
Well, if you ask my kids, they'll tell you mom's answer for everything is exercise. It's really awful. They're like, I have a problem with my friend. I have a problem in school. I have a problem at work. I'm like, well, you know what the answer is? You go exercise. Me and the New York Times are totally aligned on this. The silver bullet for everything in life is go out and get some goddamn exercise. Excuse me. But, and it really doesn't matter how you do it, but I am such a believer that we have created worlds where we sit and stare at screens all day long. This is not, we were not built to do this. And so I don't care whether you like to run, Keisha, or whether you like to, you know, climb mountains or bicycle or whatever. I mean, me personally, I swim a lot. I swim a lot in cold water these days, too. Out here in California, we are blessed that we get to swim 365 days of the year outside, except some of those days are a little chilly, and sometimes the water's a little chilly. So I do love to swim and have been fortunate enough to do the Alcatraz swim a couple of times. That's where you go and you jump off the boat, you swim back to San Francisco. There is nothing that's more clarifying for me than being in cold water and knowing that if I don't keep going, I'm not going to get to lunch. But it really doesn't matter pick your own poison. I'm afraid that I am just an absolute, fan of getting the heck outside and doing something.
Fresh air. Mm. One of my superintendent friends posted about Gen Xers being the last generation to really know what fresh air was.
So true.
Because we played outside and we, you know, we didn't have a lot of screens, and even the screens that we did have had like four channels and went off at midnight.
And you had to get up to change it.
Yeah. And they you had to get
and
up
they
and
had
change.
Reruns.
And they went off at midnight. So you're like,
so, and do you remember reruns? Remember the whole concept of reruns? Like, how many times did you see that?
And that's when you stop Batman watching thing? It. You're like, oh, this is a rerun. Guess we'll have to go outside. Mm. So, and I think he had such a great point to that. And it's just so unfortunate that our kids today have, I mean, they do exercise, but they exercise indoors in gyms with like, you know, buds in their ears listening to me. I don't know. It's just
well,
completely
I
different
will
experience.
Say that I think that there's a growing awareness, you know, we have a growing awareness in very young communities of global warming and the preciousness of our earth. And so, you know, I think the younger generations are incredibly conscious of how precious the natural environment is. Mm-hmm. But as you said, it's also a place to have fun. And so I hope that as well as taking care of it, they can also go out and just simply enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great book by Dr. Richard Louv, Louv, about vitamin N and 500 ways to enrich your health and happiness for your family and your community. And he's actually a medical doctor who talks about how important this work is. So nice
vitamin
little reminder of how important it is for us to get outside in so many ways. And as Betsy said, to exercise, right?
That's Francis's favorite word too. it's a theme. All right. Now we have a little game, activity, whatever you want to call it, where we are going to have some sentence starters and you are going to finish the sentences.
Uh-oh, this is kind of like, wait, don't tell me or something like that.
It is. And you can elaborate on like why you answered it. You don't have to be like, blue and just leave our audience hanging. You can elaborate on it.
I kind of like cliffhangers.
I know. Well, they do too, except for they tweet about it. Whatever. All right, here we go. You ready? An event that changed my worldview was
traveling, was leaving the United States, was getting the heck out of the country. I never understood what it meant to be an American until I left. And having an opportunity to travel, which I was fortunate enough to do after college, and see the rest of the world, see some of the rest of the world, begin to see the rest of the world, and begin to appreciate what were values that I was raised with and which ones did I want to absorb from the rest of the world. So definitely travel, and travel anywhere in the world that you have an opportunity to. Anywhere outside your comfort zone.
I love it. I ran out of pages on my passport, so take me with my new one anywhere, anytime, Betsy. How about this one? I became a stronger person after I...
Actually, I became a stronger person after I had children, truthfully. I was in my 30s, mid-30s, when I had kids. And, you know, I thought I knew a lot, you know, I was a snappy reporter for the Washington Post and thought I was super smart. And children humbled me. They still do. They still really do. they humbled me. They made me laugh. They made me more flexible. They reminded me of how precious our lives are. And they help me think outside of myself. So really having my kids was one of the greatest gifts, maybe the greatest gift in my life.
I agree with that so much. And Betsy, I can remember us having a conversation in a hotel lobby about, because I had left superintendent land and I was like, I don't know what to do next. I really want to do this. da 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 da, and you like almost like grab me on my shoulders and you're like, look, you do you. Don't listen to what everybody else is trying to encourage you to do or directions they're sending you. You think and reflect about what is important to you, and you do that. And I thought, I mean, that was life-changing, my friend. I really appreciate you helping me with that. So that improved my life tremendously. And I'm asking you, what improved your life tremendously? So the sentence starter is, my life improved when I
found GPS. Keisha, that was such a beautiful lead-in. I feel like I should have something really profound here, but I gotta be honest, GPS changed my life. I have one of the worst senses of direction of anybody on the planet. Next to my husband, I used to say that I thought there was a chance when we traveled together that we would wind up in the wrong country, because if there was a choice between left and right, we inevitably picked the wrong direction. I can't tell you how many hours I spent driving around on a road going, where the heck am I and how am I going to get there? The classic was one time when I had to do an interview and I flew into Denver and I was driving, and I swear to God, it was the middle of the night and I'm driving around trying to find the hotel that I'm supposed to go to. This was pre-GPS. I'm literally driving in circles like this. And I finally literally got to the point where I said, I'm going to sleep in the car, because I don't think I can get there from here. And then magically the gods said, oh, we'll give the girl a break. And they just plunked the hotel, the little motel, right down in front of me. I'm like, there it is. Otherwise, I was sleeping in that car. So GPS has totally changed my life. I have saved countless hours and much anger and frustration at myself for that. But I'm afraid, Keisha, that doesn't... quite as profound as what you said.
It's all about direction, Betsy. It's all about direction. You gave Keisha direction and you have found direction, right?
That is God's dream.
You know,
you were my GPS, Betsy.
Oh, I'm so honored. That is so beautiful. I want to wear that on a shirt.
I'm looking soon your way. You know, it's funny because I think the time I met you, Betsy, it was actually, I think you were lost, and so was I. We were at the ASU GSV conference, and we said, are we going to the same place? We jumped in an Uber together. We realized we knew Keisha, and the Uber driver got lost, and who pulls out her GPS? This one. So it is a true, true story.
Yeah, so clearly my lack of direction is something legendary. I'm being quite honest with you guys when I confess that. It's sad. It's really sad. Oh. I wish I could tell you that my children have a better sense of direction. I think it's hereditary, though. They really have challenges okay. too. So I am sorry, but it is true.
Well, on to another decision. How about this one? You ready? A decision I made that changed my life forever.
There are moments in your life when you know that you have a choice. You can go left or you can go right. You can stay or you can go. And probably one of the big moments professionally was when I was leading the Forbes Bureau. And I was leading the Forbes Bureau in Silicon Valley, and it was the end of the last recession. And of course, it was at that point the biggest recession that we had experienced in our lifetimes. And I had been with Forbes for a long time and was a little frustrated because I was spending many, many, many hours, all my waking hours, doing stuff for Forbes. And I would tell people that my kids were the most important thing in my life, but that my kids didn't have a whole lot to do with writing about semiconductors or HDTV or whatever the heck we were writing about at the time. And I felt very disconnected and broken. And I wasn't sure what to do about it, but I was very afraid because we were in the middle of a big recession, and I wasn't sure what I could do about that. And my husband, who is always my secret sort of best supporter and best source of wisdom and graciousness, said to me, well, You know, let's think about it. We might have enough. We might have enough funds that, you know, you could take off a year and figure it out. And so I took a deep breath, and in what was then the biggest recession I'd experienced, I quit my job. And I said, I want to do something in education. I believe in this. My kids are part of this world of education. I don't know how I will do that, but I'm going to take that plunge. And it was very frightening because I felt like I might have been giving up journalism, which I'd spent 20 plus years working on. And I certainly was giving up a great job that everybody else would have been killing to have. And I was giving up some money. So it felt a lot like jumping off a diving board. And it was very scary. But I have never regretted it. And it was what put me ultimately on a path to start EdSurge. Wasn't a straight path. I spent the first year basically doing IT tech support in the local schools, where I learned a lot. And I listened to a lot of educators, and I listened to what their challenges were with technology and why it didn't work for them and what they hoped it would do for them. And all of those things were fundamental to starting EdSurge and to building, you know, the voice and everything that we did. So even though it was one of the professionally scariest moments of my life, really felt like that big jump into the unknown, it was also one of the best choices I could have hoped to make.
We are so honored that you dove into the education space because we've had the opportunity to swim with you. And Keisha, I have to admit, I was a little nervous about this podcast because Betsy is like a legend and she's a legend with the questions she asks. And now I know she's a legend with the answers she provides. So
I know unless you need directions, in which case yeah, you really ought to go out and talk to somebody else.
Well, I was going to say, I'll have GPS on one shoulder and like my little Betsy life coach angel on the other shoulder to guide me moving forward. You know, Keisha and Betsy, there was this point earlier in the podcast where I was kind of put on the spot a little, and now it's my opportunity to put Keisha on the spot a little bit, right?
Yeah.
She had me answer a question, and now I get to ask her a question. So in honor of you, our esteemed Shiro, our fierce female in the education space, which we're so honored to have you in, Keisha, what new insights do you have about Betsy that go beyond the lobby and all of those dinners and the GPS in life that she provided for you?
Oh my goodness. Well, and she's just a tremendous friend. And one of those friends that we could go months, sometimes years without really connecting, COVID years, and then just reconnect, you know, which I valued those friendships the most. Because everybody has super busy lives, and just knowing, you know, we may not talk all the time, but she's there if I need her. And I appreciate that so much about our friendship. So here is what I have learned, kind of new. One, you have such an incredible impact on telling the stories of education. I'm so happy that you made that decision. Even though I know it was like a tuggy decision, like, oh, should I not? But you have just provided, first of all, you've unpacked some incredible stories that were it not for you would have never been told. And you also have provided support, and a lot of people probably don't realize that, for those supporting education, bringing startups together, helping venture capitalists come together with startups and the great minds. Before conferences existed about that, Betsy was doing it. Talk about a pebble. So she was doing stuff long before we have the known conferences that you've kind of mentioned, but I'm not going to re-mention. Frances, that, you know, now are kind of big deals, but Betsy was doing it way, way, way long before them. I love the concept of the personal board of directors. And I think that's a genius idea because it allows for like modification along the way based on what your needs are. and ideation. You're like, oh, you know, I thought I was going to go that path, but I'm not. So you're off the board, and I'm going to need this person on the board. So I love that. I do love that. I like when you said there are moments that we need to step up and moments when we need to step aside. So in our role as leaders, sometimes the best leaders do step back and let others do, you know, take on the leadership role because they're more, not qualified, potentially qualified, but it's just, it's more suited for them to do it than you to do it. And I think that is a wonderful sign of tremendous leadership. I love what you said about listening being part of learning. I'm, you know, as both of you know, I'm a horrible listener. I hear, but I don't always listen. And I, Frances has worked with me. We've been working together a lot on almost a daily basis. And she's really helped me do a much better job of that. I'm usually in such a hurry, Betsy, that I'm just, you know, I hear it, but I don't like process it the right way. And you've always been someone that's just like, and I don't even think it's because you're lost. I think you're just slow going. You just take your time and you process stuff and you think about it and you're very intentional and you don't get in a rush to respond. You're very reflective and intentional with a tremendous amount of integrity in everything you do. And I love that about you, but now I know what your secret sauce is, just being a good listener. I hope I can master that one day. I like what you said about great leaders being channels for their communities. And you are definitely that for the education community. I mean, bar none. And especially in what you've done around lifting females up and helping them become, you know, better positioned or just calling out their work that they've been doing, but probably nobody else has been talking about it. So I love that. I like what you said about our lives aren't just about work. We're incredibly adaptable, flexible, and lead with our hearts as women. And balancing and being honest with yourself about what really matters. And I think that that resonates with so many of us. But I think for our younger generation of women, I think it's really hard to kind of get there. And I think there's a lot of intimidation of if I don't move fast enough, then I'm going to be either put out of the way or you know, somebody else is going to beat me there. And I think we have, I don't know, we just have a lot of complexities as women in our career space. We always have, but I think in some ways it's getting a little bit more challenging because now we want to balance. Before we would give it up, like I gave it up until I was 54. And now, you know, they don't want to do that and they shouldn't. But it's kind of, you know, that tug. I love what you said about your children. It does always make me cry when I talk about children because just, you know, so many women give that up to have a career or they put it off and then it's too late and, or at least they believe it's too late. And it breaks my heart for them that they feel trapped in that decision. Like I have to choose between career and family because, you know, said no man ever. Right.
You know, so on that point, one of the images that I remember so clearly from a lovely book, it's an old book now, probably somewhat outdated, but it's called Composing a Life. Mm. And, the woman who wrote it made the observation that we like to talk about careers and lives as straight lines. And she said, you know, the image instead that works for me is we're a patchwork quilt. Mm. We're creating different segments of our life, and some of them are remarkably different. Mm-hmm. And the goal isn't some straight linear line up to the right. The goal is this gorgeous patchwork quilt that has different elements that really shine. and sometimes go together and sometimes don't. Sometimes they contrast with each other. But if I could leave you with one other image, it would be our lives as a patchwork and our careers as patchwork quilt rather than a straight line.
I like that. Maybe a quilt should be our new, like, emblem, Frances. And we could have all the faces of our honor roll E's on that quilt. That could be cool.
And, you know, Keisha, I just want to give a little bit of moment of appreciation to you because you have also been a leader and just an absolute banner carrier in this field of education. I knew of you long before I met you. And people would say, oh, Keisha Ray. I'm like, Keisha. And I remember the first time we were speaking together at a conference and you came in and... You were amazing. You told truth. You told it in an unvarnished, unapologetic, right down the middle kind of way. You challenged people's ideas, and you were not going to, you know, you were not going to take any excuses. And that is inspirational. And you have been an inspiration for me and for lots and lots and lots of people. And you continue to be. So thank you for that.
Sweet friend. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing your heart with us, Betsy and Keisha. You know, when we're clear about what's in our heart, we know how to care and also dare, right? To make sure that we're doing the things that are really speaking to the core of who we are. You know, we've had so much to reflect on this conversation, and I'm wondering what our listeners might be reflecting on now. And so we have one of those coaching questions, Keisha and Betsy. And so in honor of today's conversation, and I think there was some marker language around this, today's question is, how might you create your own personal board of directors for learning, feedback, and reflection? Again, how might you create your own personal board of directors for learning, feedback, and reflection? I know that's sticking with me for my own personal thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I hope that our listeners can not only talk about how they can create it, but who they might put on it. That would be super cool too. So we can't thank Betsy enough for joining us today on the amazing St. Patrick's Day and spending a little bit of time with us, sharing her incredible story and your... just amazing wisdom with us. We're I'm above honored that you have said yes, and now you're part of the club. You're in the honor roll club. I don't know if we call it a club, but it's a whole group of women that we hope to just continue to bring together and do great things with. So we're super
glad you
were here.
I am thrilled to be with you guys. I'm thrilled to be a part of the club. I don't always get invited to the clubs, and that's cool. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Hey, Keisha, how can we help our listeners continue this conversation?
Well, we're going to ask them to join our next podcast for sure. We're going to highlight another Shero in education and explore their M's. And then we want them to think about the coaching question that Frances asked about your personal board of directors. Offer up some suggestions for who we might look to for adding to our personal board of directors.
I'm choosing Betsy too,
obviously. And I choose you too, Miss Frances.
Likewise, my friend.
And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, to make sure you put that question, the answer to that question out there, and any kind of reflection and feedback you have on our show today. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.